This episode of We Are Libertarians is brought to you by Audible.com. Enjoy one free audiobook courtesy of We Are Libertarians. Choose from more than 100,000 audiobook titles, including works by Ron Paul, Walter Block, Murray Rothbard, and the Cato Institute. Audible.com also has audio of radio and TV programs and audio versions of magazines and newspapers. You can get the Audible app on any mobile device or download the audio to your computer. Go to audibletrial.com/WAL or head to WeAreLibertarians.com and find the link to get one free month of Audible today. There chimes the charms, boys. Welcome to We Are Libertarians for this week. I am your host, Chris Spangle, a true radio professional broadcasting live from the Sundance Apartments in sunny Indianapolis. Don't come find my house and murder me, please. And trust me, there's nothing valuable to steal. To my right is the pink-clad Greg Lenz. Greg, how are you doing?
Did you almost get my name wrong?
Lenz,
what? Been a couple of years, and it's a little offensive.
You know, I haven't had a nap today. Things are not going well for me, at this moment, at least. There's nothing worse than equipment failures that are your fault. You can handle equipment failures if you can blame the equipment. But
it wasn't so much a failure as improperly set up.
Yeah. I take the SD card to work. I don't edit the podcast at work. Wink. But I always forget the SD card.
Because we're on like our fourth or fifth one that you've just, oh, I'll take it to work. I'll bring it back. You redistribute SD cards like Obama.
I really do. They're like little chump, you know, they're Haitian money to me. So, you know, I am now introducing this program for the third time this evening, and I feel embarrassed because...
You nailed it, though, this third time.
Of course. This is it. All right, still recording. We're a minute and 44 in. I will keep checking. Greg showed up to the house tonight with a duffel bag full of booze.
That's what you thought.
As he usually does. I was impressed.
Well, I was trying.
Normally, you just bring a six pack. You showed up with a whole duffel bag of alcohol.
No, normally I bring a four pack and share, but I knew there were going to be plenty of guests here, so I didn't want to be a bad host like the person who lives here.
Let's be honest. You drive over with 3.5. It's the cops. Put down your beer. You're going to a libertarian podcast. Well, you're allowed to drink.
That's how I get him to stop chasing me. I just throw the half empties out at, you know.
Well, he must have known that we had quite a group of drinkers on the podcast. We have maybe the oddest combination of guests. We have the uber productive member of society, the head of the Indiana Public Defenders Commission. Here, the former vice chair of the Libertarian National Committee, the current chair of the Libertarian National Campaign Committee, the a board member of the Advocates for Self-Government, a former state chair of the Libertarian Party of Indiana, a lawyer. Very, very happy to have Mark Rutherford in my home tonight in seersucker pants. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me here. I'm very happy to be here, too.
Yeah, thanks for being on. Notice
the cordialness went down the third time.
Yeah, it was a little less enthusiastic. It was great. Thanks for being here.
Run along, Chris.
And in the other corner, we have two trolls, two libertarian brutalists, two people who produce something for society, yet nobody knows what. Single-handedly buying Ferraris for everyone at Budweiser and Anheuser-Busch. It is Aaron Ewert.
Thank you, dear leader, for having me. I'm humbled.
Oh, it's so nice to have you.
No Hemingway this time, huh?
No.
Well, who? Who's that?
And then his cousin and fellow troll, Tyler Weiss or Weiss?
Weiss is fine.
Weiss,
that's
okay.
We pronounce it.
All right.
Down in the Ville. But it's nice meeting Mark. Yeah. We've never met before. And thank you, dear leader, for having us in your humble abode here.
That is humble,
I brought gifts.
Humble abode. How dare you? This is a palace.
Oh,
it's radio.
I apologize.
It's theater of the mind.
Lakeside, even.
Lakeside. Oh. It's palatial. This is a luxury
those golden
apartment.
Golden geese I saw?
This is an open concept. There are no speed bumps in the parking lot.
No.
It
no
is a very luxurious.
Either.
4 minutes in, we're still rolling. All right.
That's great.
We wanted to talk to Mark first, you know, we talk an awful lot about Republicans, boo, hiss, We never talk about Democrats unless it's Hillary Clinton and a scandal.
And then it's just about Bill.
Right. Yeah, we talk about Bill and how much we miss him and how much we liked him. You know, we don't talk a ton about libertarians, mostly because we discuss current events, and this is a current events show for a large part. And we try to apply libertarian philosophy to those current events. But as we move into 2016, we want to talk a little bit more about candidates. And we certainly don't want the Libertarian Party to be forgotten. And there isn't anybody...
We are libertarians.
We are libertarians. and we do our best to try and cover libertarianism from all sides, all angles, all perspectives. You have minarchists, anarchists, Mayas. You have all kinds of different views. Maya-archist, social terrorism supreme.
Yes.
Who is, let me tell you...
Oh, she's on a heater right now.
If there ever was a week for Maya to terrorize society, this would be the week.
Who knew that Caitlyn Jenner...
No. It's Rand Paul and the Patriot Act. That's what's got it worked up.
Yeah, I bet.
Right. No, it's Caitlyn Jenner.
So yeah. Brave.
No. Not a fan of Caitlyn Jenner. But could we expect Maya to be happy about anything? No.
Societal end.
Yeah, the death of all humanity, yeah. And the end of false construct of society. So, Mark, did I miss anything in your biography?
Oh, you had quite a bit of my libertarian background. I do lots of things, and I've had the honor and privilege of being involved with lots of organizations. So it's great to do that. But what is really important to me right now is libertarianism, Libertarian Party, and the political angle of the libertarian world. We're in a great position to make some headway if we can do some things that need to be done. We have to do what the Republicans and Democrats figured out how to do a long time ago, and that is to support their best people who can actually govern and govern in the way that matches their philosophy. Libertarians being elected would be wonderful if that would happen, because we'd be pretty much hands-off, broad people. It would be a great thing to happen, but we've got to get those people elected.
Yeah. So... Let's step back and look at your, how did you come to libertarianism? Because, you know, Mark has been important in my life in bringing me to two jobs that just shaped and defined who I am in so many ways.
Did you ever forget to turn on one of Abdul's shows?
Yes, that's
we're just not going to broadcast this.
Yes,
one, Abdul.
That's why I had to look for a different job. Yeah. Thank God Mark was there. So I was the producer at WXNT, and I was at a Cocktails and Conversation, and I was making $17,000 a year. And over the course of that time period, I had thought, gee, I really like the libertarians. I am a libertarian. Why can't the Libertarian Party of Indiana, where's their presence? I just don't see a lot of presence with libertarians. And so I started asking around, and they all said, well, we don't have an executive director. And I broached the subject with Mark at a Cocktails and Conversation, and he said, well, how much do you want? Or something along those lines. It's been a while since I remember this conversation. And I was like, well, and I told him what I made, and he's like, oh, I'm pretty sure we could beat that.
Yes, it was very nice to be able to tell you that. Yes,
uh-huh.
It tells you how
subsidy.
Poorly radio pays.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up, so Mark introduced me to the party, and I started working as the executive director. I was there for 4 years full time. Then I went on, and Mark was on the board of the Advocates for Self-Government. I worked there. So thank you for
You're
helping
welcome.
Be an important part of shaping who I am. And you have done that with a lot of different people. I know that you are affectionately and jokingly called the godfather
Yes.
of the Libertarian Party. How did you become a libertarian? How did you get involved in the libertarian? And you have been involved for a very long time, darn near 20 years, maybe more?
Directly with the party, about 20 years in different roles, but was interested in the Libertarian Party very early on. My father worked for the Indianapolis News, wrote a column called Freedom Watch. He started writing about the libertarians in the 70s, and so, of course, I read my father's columns, and that was very interesting. So,
or else you wouldn't get any dessert.
I would not get dessert, that's right. So when I was in college, way back when in the dark ages of like 1978 to 82, I knew what libertarians were, and a bunch of my fraternity brothers were very interested in Ed Clark. I actually walked the streets of Crawfordsville passing out literature for Ed Clark for president,
right,
who was a libertarian candidate. 1980 was a very interesting year. So I was always around it, always knew what it was about. But like so many people, I was concerned it wasn't real. I noticed that it had too many ideologues. I love ideologues. But ideologues belong in think tanks. They belong writing papers. They need to be writing letters to the editor. That's their important role. But they were involved in the practical party politics. And when I saw things changing in the late 90s, and I was already very tired of the Republican Party, which I had associated with beforehand, this was about 96 or so when Harry Brown, who was the Libertarian candidate in 96, about 95 maybe, was on WIBC being interviewed. And I went, okay, this guy speaks a lot about what I think politics is all about and how we should look at life. So I started getting a little involved in the political part of libertarianism. But it would not have happened but for some good candidates, hardworking people running for office. They didn't have a chance. We have a far more greater chance now. But at the time, they were doing a good job and they were practical, and that attracted me to the party.
Yeah, Indiana especially has largely been known as a bastion of pragmatic libertarian principles. And the Libertarian Party of Indiana, and largely and partly and largely due to Mark's efforts over the years, is one of the stronger state parties. So what are some of the differences that you see in the Libertarian Party, both locally and nationally, when you first got involved in the 90s versus now? What are some of the things that are much better for the Libertarian Party now, and what are some things that are still kind of the same that need to change?
Sure. A lot of good people in the 80s and 90s, and they ended up getting the Libertarian brand out there that we exist. It's amazing how, and I'd like to say in 1994, my good friend Steve Dillon, who's running for Secretary of State, I heard radio commercials while driving down to French Lick, Indiana, and I called him up and said, good job, you got your Libertarian commercials on, this is what you need to do. But that was a big, big thing to get the word out. Advocates for self-government in the 90s would ask for people to say, hey, let us know if the word libertarian is even mentioned in a publication or a radio broadcast, television broadcast, and they'd be lucky, the organization, to get five or six a month.
Wow.
By 2000, they had to stop doing it because they were getting five or six an hour. I mean, so it's a huge, huge difference, and these predecessors did a great job doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things that they were doing right then was doing the basics they needed to do to get on the ballot. There's a lot of ballot fights in Indiana, a lot of lawsuits. Steve Dillon led a couple of things on ballot access here. We got ballot access in 1994, and I'm proud to say in Indiana that we haven't lost it since. I mean, that's a pretty darn good run for a third party in the United States to be. And the 1998 was a little iffy if we were going to do it, but we did it comfortably. We were very happy, and it's been comfortable ever since. We have to treat it seriously, but we keep doing it.
Mm-hmm. What are ballot access laws like across the country?
It depends on where you're at. In Florida, which used to have the worst ballot access laws, but a libertarian from Indiana who moved down there was very instrumental in getting the legislature to change them, so that was, you pay a little bit of money and a few signatures, and anybody who is competent enough to do that can get on the ballot. They tend to have sometimes five or six candidates for each office. That's not a problem. That's very easy to understand. Indiana's pretty tough. I mean, I'm very proud of the Libertarian Party of Indiana for staying on the ballot, because we have to get 2% of the vote of the Secretary of State's race in signatures that are approved and go through the political process and come out at the end that they're valid signatures. And we keep doing that. But that's a pretty tough requirement. Some states have even worse. Michigan's 5% in the presidential race. And gosh darn it, we do well in Indiana by getting 1% mm-hmm. or a little bit more in the presidential race, because when it comes to voting for your city councilor, who you know and is a libertarian, well, shoot, we get 20, 30% in some races or more, and even elect them because everybody knows who they are and they're cool people and they know what they're going to do.
We go to their barbecue.
You go to the barbecue. But when it's president, they've never met our candidate. It's very hard to get the word out there. It costs millions and millions of dollars to get the word out. So like Michigan has very tough ballot access. At one time they did, but they had good people and still have good people, and they were able to get the legislature to reduce the ballot access requirement. Yes.
In Michigan, wasn't Justin Amash in the state house before he moved on and won the seat in Grand Rapids?
I don't remember if he was or not, but he was very well known in there.
Was he influential at all in getting that?
No.
Not
that I'm aware of, no.
So as a longtime Libertarian Party member, what is the difference in the global climate for libertarians? I mean, you mentioned the articles, but I hear libertarians who have been involved in a long time. I'm actually having lunch tomorrow with Joe Hauptman, our current Libertarian Party Vinia state chair. And Joe says there has never been a better time to be a libertarian.
That's because Joe's correct.
Okay, tell me more.
Everybody's talking about libertarianism. A lot of people understand broadly what it's about. And a lot of people understand that it may be a lifestyle choice. I mean, do unto others as you would do unto them is kind of the easiest way to describe a lot of way libertarians try to live their life. We're not perfect, but we try to live our life that way. And a lot of people are talking about it, about what it is, about how less government can be better government. Interesting, I was talking with a friend before I came here who's a Democrat, and we have a lot in common. Because we both believe that we're overregulated and it's hard for businesses to make money so that people can earn money. And so he is talking about, I'm kind of like you, Mark, from that standpoint. I don't have to agree with him on everything, but I'm glad that he understands that there are a lot of libertarian traits that the Democrats and Republicans share. The thing that's so great about this is that the center of the political spectrum right now is libertarian. Leave me alone. Let me live my life. Let me put my kids through college. Don't make it hard for me. And the people are beginning to recognize that the way government is being run now makes it hard for them to do that. Why is that? Well, a lot of it is the work that people have done for the last 20, 30, 40 years with the Libertarian Party and getting the name out. But I do think that we could have been a lot farther ahead if we would have allowed pragmatic people to run pragmatic campaigns. And what do I mean by that? Rex Bell, who's a very active libertarian in eastern Indiana, one of the most libertarian people in his philosophy that I know. But here's his philosophy, and his philosophy is a good philosophy. If I get elected to office, I can't make it a libertarian world right away. But everything I do will move us an inch closer.
Statist.
Yeah,
and that's what I get, Greg.
I know.
That's what
it's annoying as can be.
And Rex's endpoint is a very wonderful world. I think it would be very successful and people would be pleased by it. And I know he's been appointed to zoning boards in the county because he's very well respected. In Hagerstown, Indiana, he's had a couple of appointed positions. And if you look at what he does, you know, he's not looking to break everything. Close down the roads. But if he can figure out a way to make the servicing of the roads or the zoning more libertarian, then he pushes that way. One of my favorite stories is Rex telling me that when he was first on the zoning board, they were doing things that he thought were against the law. And he just mentioned to everybody and showed them what the statute said. And they went, oh, I didn't know that. Well, guess what happened? They started following the law. Things got better because a libertarian was there. That's why you have to be practical in running races, showing what it is that you are for, not against necessarily, and that you get the word out that I'm a person there that you can trust to gradually get us to a better position.
That area of Indiana, that that eastern corridor along I-70, has been very successful. We've had several people elected, including Judge Susan Bell, who has been reelected, I think, twice.
Yes,
now
at least three times
to town Hagerstown judge. I think is it Steve Kaufman in Hancock County?
Yeah, it's in Henry County.
Henry County. It goes Hancock, Henry, and then Wayne County. And so those three counties especially have been very successful, not just because of Rex's effort, but of the effort of a lot of different people.
Yes.
I hope you're not allergic to cats. That's Mittens.
No, not at all.
She may bite, but she just wants to check you out.
Can't
make sure
any
that
worse
you're
than a Democrat or Republican. Oops,
yep.
Did I say that?
Yeah, no. She's just checking to make sure that you're pure enough.
Rex didn't get hammered for trying to enforce the law? Another statist move.
No, he didn't get hammered for that, and he made a huge move. There are people out there, and I call them the ideologues, and they do have a valid role, but they do it instead of attacking the Republicans and Democrats or pointing out to society why their views might be something to consider. too many of them spend time trying to attack people who are actually in their same camp.
I couldn't agree more.
The World's Smallest Political Quiz by the Advocates for Self-Government. It's a wonderful thing. Go to the Advocates for Self-Government website. Do a Google search. You'll find it. Do World's Smallest Political Quiz. You'll find it. If you're in this one part of the diamond, which is about 20-25% of the way this mapped out, is libertarian. And if it's libertarian, then... those are the people that should be working together.
So
welcoming them in.
Yeah, Mark. Hold on. I actually realized that I was a libertarian.
Who did? Say that again.
The quiz.
Okay.
My brother-in-law gave me a Reason magazine. I was a big Ditto head. Listened to Rush Limbaugh religiously. Like I was a big neocon. And you know, I started reading this Reason magazine. And my brother-in-law told me about Ron Paul. And you know, got the gears turning in my head. Then I took that quiz and I realized I'm a libertarian. You know, so I appreciate
yeah.
you.
Yeah, can you talk about the Advocates for Self-Government a little bit?
Sure.
Our audience is somewhat familiar with it, having worked there and talking about the quiz. What does that organization do, and what is the purpose?
Well, the purpose of the organization is to promote libertarianism as a small L libertarianism. Libertarianism. We're not a political group, but what we try to do is show that what libertarianism is about. It's a lifestyle thing. It's about treating people respectfully. It's about living your life, taking self-responsibility. Advocates for Self-Government is a great way to describe it. If more people try to take responsibility for their lives, live good lives, well, however they think it should be, but be responsible for their actions, be responsible for their consequences, but to do things that are nice, raise their families, etc., to not steal from other people, to not hit other people, to not defraud other people.
Radical.
If everybody tried to do it, and we all make mistakes, but if everybody tried to do that, the need for government the argument for government would be drastically reduced. So we promote that quite a bit. We promote people taking the World's Smallest Political Quiz, try to get them to our website. We try to get out through our social media different things about people who are living libertarian lives, about people who are talking about how to live as a libertarian, about the libertarian philosophy. So we're not promoting candidates because we're not, if it's a Republican or Democrat or even a Green Party person, we don't care their affiliation. We care that they're living their life in this way. So that's one of the big things about Advocates for Self-Government. We're working on a big project right now about how do we move people towards libertarianism. We want them to go to our website. We want them to go to our quiz. And then we're working on how do we get them to go to the next step. You know, yeah, I think I'm kind of close to libertarian. I'm interested in learning more. How do we get them to learn more? That's very exciting what we're doing with that.
So let's move back to the partisan arena a little bit. Let's talk about what libertarian candidates, in my experience, having worked with hundreds of libertarians of candidates over the years, and being familiar with the Indiana political process, having been a Republican and working on Republican campaigns in the past, Republican and Libertarian presidential campaigns and Senate campaigns and House campaigns are largely very different. But state level, local level, there is really almost no difference in size of staffing, and they're really... There is a financial difference. There isn't a great fundraising network within the Libertarian Party. But in terms of the amount of volunteers, the amount of effort put in by a lot of candidates in all parties, you're really on equal footing in a lot of ways. So what are some unique challenges and some similarities that I guess the best way to ask the question is, what is it like to run as a libertarian?
Well, that's a very broad question, not attacking you for that, because you've got people running as a libertarian who aren't doing a very good job at it. I appreciate their efforts, but there's so many periodicals and advisors and consultants and people in the Libertarian Party of Indiana who really know what they're doing because we've practiced it, we've studied it, we've learned about it, that the people who do it well and run as a libertarian is... First of all, they're known in their community.
Mm-hmm.
They're not afraid to become president or a board member of their homeowners association. if they're a church, if they're belong to churches, they aren't afraid to be involved with committees. They aren't involved to be in leadership for churches. They're not involved to afraid to be involved with nonprofits if they like the YMCA, they like the library, whatever it is, because the goal is if you're going to run for office, you've got to show that you know what you're doing and you're competent for what you're running for. We're much better than we used to be in running people who have a resume that is as good as, if not better than, the Democrats and the Republicans. So the first thing for our good candidates and our best candidates is that they have a background where you go, yeah, they could do this. Like Rex Bell, pick on him a little bit more. He has a very successful construction company. He's been active in his church out there. He's active in lots of things. People know him, so they go, okay, all right, I'm not sure of your philosophy, Rex, but because you are a good guy who gets things done and are good to work with, I'm going to listen to you. And then that's how you make people go, yeah, okay, I get it. I'm a libertarian.
If you run for office as a libertarian, can you win?
Yes.
Okay.
The reason that we don't win more is that we have to do what the Republicans and Democrats do. And that's not the fraud that they do. That's not the sneaky Machiavellian politics that they do. What it is that they do, and usually most of them do, is they go out on their feet and they knock on doors and say, hi, I'm Mark Rutherford. I would like you to vote for me, and here's why. And you give a good reason why.
Yeah.
And some voters will say, that's not good enough for me. Well, that's fine. Nice talking with you. But the other people will go, great, I didn't know you existed, and I met you, and I think I'll vote for you. It's the personal touch. That's how the candidates do it.
Yeah, I think political science in and of itself is not evil. Political science is a science, and if you use it for evil, like Karl Rove, for instance, then... You know, then it will be evil. And it
I don't
will
know
be...
why you hate Christian conservatives, Chris.
I know. Well, we'll get to that
compassionate
later.
Compassionate conservatism.
But there are just basic techniques of political organizing that work. And
yes.
The other two sides have mastered it.
Right.
And we have not. And it's largely because, well, I don't know why. I just think we make a lot of excuses. And part of what I have tried to bring to the people around me or the people that I talk to or the people that listen to me is don't give yourself excuses. There are no excuses. Just go out and do it.
Right. Well, Susan Bell, bless her heart, she did it the right way and got elected.
Right.
She walked the streets. She had a good reason why she should be the town court judge and not the incumbent. And the voters said, sure, we'll give you a try because we're, for whatever reason, they did not want to reelect the incumbent. And she's been reelected twice now.
Has there ever been a specific office you guys... I mean, the city council, obviously, those types of positions. But I would think a judge, a libertarian judge, would just be a shoo-in every time.
Not necessarily. For one thing, attorneys tend to be tied into the Republicans and Democrats. So it's very hard to find people who are qualified to run for it. The benefit of some town court judgeships is that you don't have to be an attorney. That's quickly been eroded away by the General Assembly. Susan could not run for her office now, but she's grandfathered in, which means they have to let her run until she chooses not to run. She's not an attorney, but she's a darn good judge. Whether that should be the requirement or not for all to be attorneys is another show. But
we'll save the attorney jokes for when you leave.
Yes, for when I leave, that would be great. But that's one of the problems with that. And one of the best offices, I think, to run for a libertarian are township boards, township offices, and city councils of mid-sized smaller cities. Because those districts are small enough for you to be able to go out and meet everybody.
Yeah.
It's hard to do, and there's ways to do it, but Rob Place, this was, oh my gosh, probably 15 years ago, maybe a little less than that, he gave the scare of an incumbent in, I believe it was Noblesville, Indiana. And the reason he did quite well, didn't pull it off, but he certainly had the incumbent worried, was he probably knocked on every door in his district.
Yeah, and the best part about that is that the incumbents start actually interviewing for their job, and they actually start paying attention to what their libertarian opponent is saying. They meet them during debates and candidate forums. They're held accountable.
Yes.
They hear new ideas that they might adopt. I mean, it's we've talked about Mike Pence. One of the hallmarks of Mike Pence's failed governorship here in Indiana is an idea that Rupert introduced, which was, I'm not saying anything that's not absolutely true.
No, you just sound a little like Rush. I hope he fails.
I hope he... well, I didn't hope he fails.
No, you've announced his failure.
I've announced his failure. I've called it. It's 9:54 p.m. And it was the reforming education to be friendlier towards vocational education because not everybody's going to college.
Right.
That was an idea that Rupert started talking about as soon as he announced.
Yes.
Penn's people tested it, found out that it worked really well. It really spoke to a lot of people. So they turned it into campaign commercials, and then they turned it into governance. And that is an example of the benefits of a libertarian candidate being in the race, is grading on their opponent, sharpening them a little bit, making them think, making them see a totally different point of view, and making them work harder.
Can you imagine what it would be like if we actually got our people elected?
Exactly.
How even
right.
more influential they were? I'm sorry.
So how do we do that, Mark? Let's talk about how we get people elected. How do we identify those candidates? I hear all the time, we should run a ton of candidates in every district and every spot that's open, and then I hear we should take all the money in, from all the libertarians and all the country and put it in one race. So what is the happy medium? How do we find, identify candidates that are worthwhile, and how do we support them?
Well, you need to get to train your candidates well. One of the first things you do is you tell them you have to raise money. There's nothing wrong with that. I've got a car outside your apartment here. It won't go anywhere unless I put gasoline in it. As much as I would wish it to do so, it won't. So you tell your candidates that you've got to, you know, that's part of your job. Your job is to shake hands, talk to people, and help raise money. Now, when you're running for city council, it may sound like this is awful, but if you it's relatively easy to raise a few thousand dollars to get yard signs, etc., if you're well known, if people like you, if people know that you could do a good job. You talk to your friends and family first. You can raise quite a bit of money doing that. If your friends and family won't give you money, you've got a really deep problem there.
Yeah.
You probably shouldn't be running for office. But a lot of Lib candidates...
Yeah, I've had that experience. Not me personally, but with candidates.
Yes. Ooh. But a lot of Republicans and Democrats, and I know lots of people in the political world, and the Republicans and Democrats have the same problem. They're just 150 years old and
brand awareness
and have a lot more resources when something doesn't work right in which they can fall back on.
You're head of, and to be sneaky, we legitimately wanted to have Mark on to talk about this topic, but I also wanted to talk about the LNCC, the organization that you're chair of, because I think it's an important organization. And my good friend Evan McMahon, my coworker for a long while at the Libertarian Party of Indiana, he's the executive director of it. Can you talk about? So we wanted to bring you on to not only talk about the role that the Libertarian Party plays, because we're going to talk a lot about Rand later, and we'll get your thoughts on Rand Paul and the presidential race and all that good stuff here in a minute. But I want to make people aware of the LNCC. I want people to listen and hear why they should financially support your organization, first and foremost, because I think it is an important organization. And this is not a commercial. Mark is not paying for time. It's just I think it's an important discussion and an important organization that needs your support and your ears. So can you talk about what the LNCC is?
Well, before first? I do that, if you like what I say, go to our donate page at www.lnc.org/donate. See, fundraising is pretty easy if you think about it.
LNCC.org.
LNCC.org right. /donate.
Not hard at all.
No, it's not.
So what is the the LNCC do?
The Libertarian National Campaign Committee is one of two campaign committees. The one that everybody knows about is the Libertarian National Committee. That's the one that's responsible for platforms, presidential elections, choosing the presidential candidate, and all that stuff. The Libertarian National Campaign Committee is a national committee. We're under the FEC. You know, they've succeeded in regulating politics quite well in the United States. And we're not allowed to participate in the presidential race or its selection. We aren't allowed to do anything with the platform. That's liberating.
Yeah.
It needs to be done, but we don't have to worry about it. We can concentrate on the work of getting people elected. Mm-hmm. And so that's what the Libertarian National Campaign Committee focuses on. Evan McMahon, our executive director, spends lots of time talking to county chairs, county volunteers, many places, Ohio, Colorado, Arkansas, Indiana. He talks to candidates all across the nation when they're running. We worked with people in Virginia last year, Florida, Indiana, Ohio. He spent a lot of time in Illinois with their auditor's candidate. She was fantastic. She almost got them ballot access. It requires 5% in a statewide race, and she was at 4.8%. They're running radio commercials in Chicago. I mean, that's wonderful. So he is there to help them do that. And our focus as the Libertarian National Campaign Committee is campaigns. We're trying to figure out how to get people elected on a regular basis. And I'll just be blunt about it. It takes money.
Right.
Lee Atwater, a Karl Rove mentor. Money is the mother's milk of politics.
Yes, it is.
So what are some projects that you guys are working on that you need funded?
This is the hard part, but I would prefer to keep Evan McMahon working for us.
Right.
But here's why that's so beneficial. He gives all this support. He's a consultant for free, and sometimes free is bad, but
right.
But he's there. Yeah. He's there to help people, and he's got good campaign experience. The other thing is that we're working on getting people elected.
And let me say, Evan was Rupert's campaign manager, one of the highest profile, most successful campaigns in Indiana and the National Libertarian Party's history. Rupert in 2012 for governor. The survivor guy, I know that it sounds crazy, but it was, you know, a major, huge campaign office downtown, RV, traveling all over the state, hundreds of stops, thousands of people talked to, a ton of money raised. It was truly a pleasure to be part of it, and Evan managed all that. Evan has years of political experience in both the Republican and the Libertarian Party, and let's face it, the Libertarian Party is not in a position where they can hire campaign consultants like the other two parties.
Correct.
But you, like I said, the campaigns at the local level are at the same level as the Republican and Democratic campaigns for the most part. Only their local parties have institutional knowledge that local libertarian parties do not.
Correct.
And Evan brings some of that institutional knowledge and campaign knowledge for some of these candidates. And candidates that you guys have targeted, that you have discovered and figured out, these guys have a chance to win or make a significant impact. For instance,
right.
Julie Fox in Illinois almost gaining ballot access in Illinois. So it is... The two things that I found lacking in my volunteers and candidates in the Libertarian Party of Indiana, the 4 years I was there, it was that they didn't think they knew enough about the libertarian philosophy, and that they didn't think they knew enough about how to run a campaign and win. And kudos to you for working on the two organizations that helped solve those two issues, the Advocates and the LNCC. And I think both of them are really worth everyone taking a look at, theadvocates.org. and lncc.org. Because Evan is going to help these guys win elections, and help them find resources and help them find some income to fundraise to buy yard signs, to
right.
buy the things that you need to win an election. So I find it to be a very important organization.
What's that relationship like, though, for Evan? Imagine, hey, you don't have to pay this guy, but we're going to send him out to help you. And, you know, he's not from the district or he's not from the area. Is it a contentious relationship when he shows up?
Well,
do they welcome it?
No.
It's usually very, very welcomed. He's not going to go into a contentious situation. If they don't want his help, we're not going to force it upon them. But he's there with the knowledge, and if we're searching out the people who want to try to get good enough to win. That's what we want. If there's contention, then maybe they need to resolve some issues before we do any support out there.
So he kind of goes around and vets and builds out a network of viable candidates?
Yes, he does. We're always looking at viable candidates. Right now, this is 2015, in most states, including Indiana, it's an off-year election. We do have municipal candidates here in Indiana, but he's out recruiting candidates for 2016 in Indiana. Because we've made a decision as a board that Indiana, because of its long-term success, and because we're located here and our headquarters is here, We need to have the first. We need to start getting the successful franchises going here.
So you had all the success, even with your awful executive director and the Libertarian Party.
Shut up!
What? What? What?
Indiana was very successful.
I'm totally successful. Kidding. You know,
yes,
I'm totally
what?
Kidding.
No. We did very well under Chris. We did.
I'm totally joking. I'm totally joking.
So.
Wow, guys, are your feels hurt?
So let me ask you about Rand Paul.
Yes.
And Gary Johnson. There is going to be a debate on this program and in the Libertarian Party until one of them is no longer on the ballot. And let's be honest, Gary will probably be on your November ballot in 2016, and Rand Paul has a good chance of not being there, which is why we should, in my mind. Now, I know that you are of the LNCC, so you're probably not able to say this or want to say this or believe this, but libertarianism in all political forms, as long as you're talking about libertarianism and you are moving in a libertarian direction, is good in my mind. And so Gary Johnson and Rand Paul are both beneficial to the libertarian movement. And both are important. It's not an either-or choice, unless it is on November 16th. And let's hope that we have a Rand Paul versus Gary Johnson choice on our ballot.
Oh, that'd be wonderful.
Exactly.
So they don't split and Hillary wins.
Mm-hmm. Well, Hillary, who knows?
Yeah.
That's a good question. Let's start with Rand Paul and your thoughts on Rand Paul and the Libertarian president, and it all comes back to the wasted vote. Is a vote for, so let's start here. Is a vote for the Libertarian Party a wasted vote?
It never is, because I know a lot of politicians from the Republicans and Democrats, and they know what our vote totals are. They know when they feel that we've hurt them. So that's not a wasted vote. That sends a message, a huge message. And if you don't start voting for Libertarians, you're not going to elect them. Right. We need to do a better job, though, of getting the word out. I strongly believe that the reason that we get 5-10% in some races is because they were the only ones who knew we existed. Well, shame on us. We need to raise the money to get the radio, the cable, the TV, the direct mail, the social media, so that people know that we exist. Once they know we exist, and if they discount us because they don't agree with us, well, shame on them. But a lot of times it's shame on us because we're not getting the word out that we exist. There's a lot of people out there who like us once they learn we exist. And you get those people voting, it's not a wasted vote. And it can have huge, huge effect. I've seen it all the time.
So is Gary Johnson a spoiler? Is he a problem for Rand Paul? Is a libertarian presidential? Should the libertarians just not run a presidential candidate?
No, you have to run a presidential candidate. Candidate, we're a political party. That's what political parties do. That's how we get the word out. You got to run a good candidate for president who's a standard bearer, who gives the good backdrop so that the city councilor can get elected. Yes, I'll vote for you, Mark, for city council. I know you're good. And by the way, your presidential candidate's pretty cool too, so I'm not afraid of you guys. Now, I'm not going to vote for your presidential candidate, but I'm going to vote for you. Victory.
Right.
They're voting for me because the presidential candidate is good. But they're still not quite ready to do that on the national level because the word's not out there quite as much. I mean, Gary Johnson's a former governor of New Mexico. I mean, talk about a qualified candidate. That's incredible. When it comes to running against Rand Paul, well, you know, what's wrong with having two libertarian-esque candidates? Rand Paul is not as solid, in my opinion, along the things I believe in. Gary Johnson and I, I've talked to him many times. We're very solid. We think about the world and how things should be done very much the same way. I'll be voting for Gary Johnson if he chooses to run and gets the nomination again. But I'm not going to be unhappy about Rand Paul. I mean, why should he be unhappy about a guy who works hard to knock down the NSA? I mean, my guys used to say, thank you, Rand.
Right. All right. Any other questions, Greg?
I have just a couple. One, it's funny, I see the libertarians, like Cuccinelli kind of settled the whole idea of the wasted vote in Virginia, did he not?
Yes, I mean, I think
so. They looked at the polling data and he pulled more from Democrats than he ended up pulling. You know, he got a lot of the civil libertarian vote and the left libertarian vote away from Democrats.
Well, Greg, if I may, we get a lot of polling data after the election because it's still valuable, but it's not going to affect the race. So we have friends all over the place. And I tell you, when our candidates run looking to knock down the Democrat and we run on issues along those lines, we take Democrat votes. When we're looking at running on issues for the Republican, a lot of strategic reasons to do it, we take that Republican votes. One thing I like to know is I know this for a fact. Everybody said that we kept Sodrel from winning the race in the 9th district, maybe 8-9 years ago. I know the polling data. We kept Barron Hill from winning by as much. Sodrel lost because he wasn't a good candidate, and Hill was hurt by us because we ran on themes that we thought would attract the Democrats because we thought it was important strategically to do that.
The other part of it is the Republicans will run a crappy candidate, and so the base doesn't want to support that candidate, so they'll vote Libertarian.
That's right.
You know, and in the second district, Mark Vogel was accused. You know, had he not been in the race, those 18,000 voters or whatever it was, I think it was 11,000 voters, would have gone to Jackie Walorski, and Joe Donnelly wouldn't have been elected to Congress. Well, Jackie's really lucky that the 90,000 Democrats that voted in the previous election didn't vote in that.
Yeah.
She was never going to win that district in the first place. She's lucky she got as close as she did. And Mark Vogel was a pro-choice, anti-war. And this was 2010, so it was not
the healthcare year.
It was the healthcare year, and he was a pharmacist. And is a pharmacist,
that
so it was a common sense candidate. But you're telling me that an atheist, pro-choice, libertarian candidate is, you know, stealing votes from Jackie Walorski, the great well, pro-life candidate? It just never made any sense. I mean, and it comes down to freedom of speech. You have a right to vote your voice in the election, and the more that Republicans and Democrats limit who is and who is not on the ballot, and who you can and cannot vote for, and how effective that vote may or may not be, they're silencing your free speech.
Well, one thing to remember, and I know this because I'm involved in libertarian politics at the national level, is that a lot of people who vote libertarian would not have voted but for the libertarian candidate. We have a large percentage of those voters. You remove the libertarian choice, they're not voting for the Democrat, Republican, Independent, Green. They're voting for no one. They're not showing up. They're going, I've got an option that I can believe in. It's a large number.
I know Joe Hopman, the first libertarian. Actually, it's funny, Mark, for me, and Tim McGuire, and then, of course, you, were the reason I was like, all right, I'm a libertarian. You know, because I've always been a liberty-leaning Republican,
right?
Like a Justin Amash. And then I was like, you know, I was so afraid, and I had been, you know, not attacked, but like, I wasn't pure. I was impure, and I will always be impure.
It doesn't hurt. I've been caught all types of things at national conventions.
Oh, Mark was in. There used to be a magazine called Liberty Magazine.
It's Liberty for America.
It's Liberty Unbound.
Oh, Liberty Unbound.
Yeah,
yes,
libertyunbound.org, I think it is. Mark was blasphemed in there years ago. Mark, Liberty for All. Let's not even get into George Phillies and his opinion of you, but. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a very real battle within the LP, just like there is in every other party, between purists and pragmatists.
Yes.
And, you know, I generally fall down on the side of direction libertarianism versus destination libertarian. Destination libertarianism is Amaya, who says that if you don't advocate for absolutism at this point, then you will never drag people to where I'm at. And I say people aren't there yet. You have to start gently nudging them that way, and then the ball will get rolling, and then eventually everybody ends up where you're at.
Kind of like what happened to gay rights in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very much a student of politics. I've seen it for years. And I'm old enough now to have actually experienced the 20, 30-year view of it.
Teach us young children, Mark Rutherford.
Yes, that's right.
Tell us. Give us a little brief history of that.
Of what?
Of gay rights in Indiana.
Oh, my goodness. When I was in college, it was a big deal. I had a friend of mine come up, and he was scared out of his mind to tell me he was gay.
You can curse here. It's okay.
Yeah, okay, I can. Right. He was scared out of his mind that he was gay. Right. My reaction, because I already had very strong libertarian thoughts at that time, was, all right, fine. So, okay, let's get a beer. I mean, it was not a big deal to me, but I understood why it scared him, because it was. People did not get out of the closet at that time. And that was only 1979, 1980.
Yeah.
Now it's not a problem. They have worked.
Yeah.
They've worked hard. It was a strategy. The strategy has been around for a long time, but if you study the history of gay rights, it was in the 50s that some people said, we've got to come up with a strategy, and it's going to take decades. It's not going to take days. And they worked, and they worked, and guess what? Look at where we're now. I'm just hoping in 10 years that whether you are gay or not or lesbian is not a question. I don't care what your preference is.
Yeah.
Vote libertarian.
Vote libertarian.
And donate.
Yeah, that's right. If you provide a service, will you provide it to me? Yeah, and do a good job? Good. I don't give a crap about what it is that you like to do in your own spare time.
Yeah, I mean, the Libertarian Party of Indiana, under your tutelage, and Brad Klopfenstein, the executive director at the time, you guys put together a property tax reform plan.
Yes, we did.
And what happened with that?
Well, in 2001, many of us, and Brad was executive director at the time, had a lot of good people working on it, put together a property tax plan. Greg Kelver, who's still very active up in LaPorte, Indiana, was involved with that. And it was about 12 pages long. We had a big press conference. We gave it to all the legislators, all the media, got a little attention on it. And my goodness, when Ballard was running for mayor, that would be in 2007, big property tax stink. And after that happened, and after that election, and you had people from rich to poor just complaining about it, it's amazing how the broad aspects of that plan were put into law.
I'm trying to remember. We actually talked about that recently, didn't we? Someone that was a poster girl for that.
Melissa Donahue.
Melissa Donahue. That's definitely right. Yeah. The
Melissa Hubbard now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Melissa Hubbard.
Which is
Spanking City Hall. Yeah. We talked about her in the last episode, and she was very instrumental in that.
Yes,
thank you
was.
For making the spanking motion, Aaron. So anyways, in conclusion,
can I ask one quick question?
Of course you can.
So I've always loved the story of Chris Roofer, and the guy is he on the board? Or does he hold a board seat?
Yeah, he's on the board of Advocates for Self-Government.
Okay,
he's a self-made man. Drove a tomato truck as a college student, and now he's the just a large percentage of the tomato packing business. Oh, he's a multimillionaire, starting from just saying, hey, I can do this better. And he did. And he's done quite well.
And I didn't even know that until you told me that. I just assumed you had a vast network of donors. Mm-hmm.
He's got something called the Self-Management Institute.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And look up the Self-Management Institute and look up the Reason video called Tomato. And it's about his corporate structure in his company is mm-hmm. very libertarian based. He applied the ideas of libertarianism to work, and it's self management. What was the big tech company that just was it
Google that got rid of the open office format?
No, it was Zappos.
Zappos, Tony Shea, yeah.
Yeah, they just went self management, mm-hmm. and Chris Roofer was doing that long. You know, when Tony What's-His-Face at Zappos was in diapers. So check out iTomato. Mm-hmm. And we'll post that on the Facebook page, actually. So check that out. We're recording this on June 4th. So look on June 4th, 2015 for that video.
And then the other thing was, so you joined the Libertarian Party here in Indiana in 96?
That's probably when I joined it, about 96. Although Steve Dillon is a good friend of mine and running for Secretary of State, a local attorney. And so I was giving money to the Libertarians, 93, 94 at least.
So. And then, so at what stage did you start the LNCCC?
The LNCCC has been around for a while, although I was involved as a member of the Libertarian National Committee in getting it started. I don't remember the exact time, but it was probably about 2003, 2004.
Did much of an organization exist, or was it sort of you guys showed up in a room and said, hey, we got to put together, we got to get something off the ground.
Every great Libertarian Party organization starts in a bar, Greg.
It did, and it started in a Libertarian National Committee meeting, which meant that there was a bar afterwards. But because of changing campaign finance laws, we were afraid that if we didn't go ahead and form this other national committee, we might be precluded without having filed massive lawsuits. So we did it. It was not very active for about 10 years, or not about 5 years. Then it started getting active. I have a predecessor, a couple of predecessors. When I and Evan and I got involved, we moved it to Indianapolis, and we really focused its format on trying to get people elected.
And I will tell you, they're part of what we do at We Are Libertarians is give you an easily, fun, accessible way to libertarianism. And at our website, wearelibertarians.com, give you resources to direct you these various places. The National Libertarian Committee and the state parties exist to help get ballot access and just kind of keep the lights on for the Libertarian Party. The Advocates helps, you know, do outreach. Cato gives that, you know, and Mises give that academic backbone. Reason gives that fun pop culture magazine feel to it. You know, the LNCC exists as the political arm to get candidates trained and get candidates elected. It doesn't mean that all or one of these are better than the others or any of that kind of stuff. It just means that everybody has a different role. Everybody has a different job. And, you know, carve some money out of mm-hmm. your budget and start supporting the LNCC.
Thank you, Chris.
And the Advocates and
mm-hmm. We're Advocates.
Mm-hmm. We are Libertarians. We'll talk about that
primarily
in a little bit.
That one.
Give a little to the LNCC,
yes.
But a lot to us.
A lot
and
you,
the executive
yes.
director wasn't bad. I knew it was you. That's why I was joking. I want everyone to know that I wasn't putting you down.
No, I know. It's okay. I know. You're a very giving individual. Giving me shit. Stuff. Sorry, Mark's here. We have to be respectful.
Oh my goodness.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us, Mark.
Yes, my pleasure.
Give the LNCC's website address one more time.
Yes, it's lncc.org. That's lncc.org.
All right. And if people want to get in touch with you directly, I imagine you're on the Facebook, on the Twitter, and all that good stuff.
Yes, I am.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Google Godfather of Libertarians.
Right.
Yeah, that won't get you there, but Mark Rutherford, libertarian, will give you way more pages. Some of them are good. Some of them are not so good. But you'll find out where I'm at.
Uh-huh. I requested you, Mark.
Did you? Well, great. Great. I think I'll have to accept it. That's wonderful. Thank you.
All right. So please check out the LNCC. Mark, thanks for coming down
thank
to
you.
Dear Leader's Palace and
thank you.
Consuming Golden some palace. Beers with us. So
yes, thank you.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
Music for We Are Libertarians is provided by Hoosier musician Brian Keith Wallen. Please check out his website, briankeithwallen.com. The song is Bad Spell.